welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio. This is our 7-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, starting off the new year by celebrating stories of some outstanding people in our listening area or who have lived in our listening area. Some are well-known and some are unsung heroes. What really inspired this show was the person I so often turned to late Tuesday night when I was having trouble putting together the Wednesday show. You may have guessed that is Paul Wearson, who has been my co-host on Local Talk. He told me he always went to bed late and encouraged me to call him by saying he'd be awake. I think I had an insoluble problem, and when I finished talking with Paul, I saw it really wasn't something to worry about, and I could go to sleep and wake up early in the morning. The reason that I'm confiding this to our listeners is that it really fits in with Paul Wearson, who was honored with a full-page ad in the Story City Herald entitled, Thanking Paul Wearson. I'll let Paul describe how this tribute affected him.
Well, there was a young man who had just joined the YMCA. He had joined the staff at the West Suburban YMCA. And yeah, there was a thing called the high-y clubs that were part of the middle school program or a junior high program. And he had just come out of college, just gotten married. And he went to Stillwell Junior High School, which is in the West Des Moines school system, and signed up all these Y clubs. And he felt very elated. And then he realized that there really wasn't any facility to find advisors for them. He was panicking that he didn't have any advisors for these people, you know, adult guidance. So I really felt badly for him, and I volunteered to do that just out of a concern that he was having a bad experience on his first job. And so that's how I met the middle school boys, and they would meet in the high-y club. They would meet in the homes of the various kids. And so that's how I got started.
I know they were very special to you. So when you told me that they had put an ad in the Story City Herald, I really wanted to know what the story was.
I had just had a health crisis. I had a stroke on the 29th of November. I had never been in the hospital or had any contact with the medical community. Suddenly, I had a stroke, and I had some heart issues, too. And I was staying with friends after I got out of the hospital. And here comes Mike Jensen, who was the mayor of Story City. And he was saying that he was hand-carrying a full-page ad that was a thank you for the old YMCA group. And these are the boys who were involved with my tutelage back in 1969 to 1974, the class of 74 at Valley High School. And I was in their weddings. I was in a lot of the life situations, even after high school and into college. But, you know, I've maintained contact with them intermittently. But suddenly this ad appeared, and it wasn't connected to my stroke at all. It was just a spontaneous idea that they had had to honor me. It was a fantastic opportunity, and a full-page ad in the Story City Herald that just appeared, you know. And so there were no connection to my health crisis at all. But it happened at a time when, you know, I'm unsure of my future, and I'm trying to recover from the stroke and some heart issues, and it was just really almost a George Bailey experience where I had a crisis, but at the same time, I was reminded that I've had a wonderful life through the gifts of others. And so it was, I just see it as a George Bailey experience. At the same time that I was having a crisis in my own life, this wonderful tribute came right out of the blue. So it was a remarkable coincidence.
Well, I think this is just perfect as an introduction to the what the boys have to say, the boys who were now in their 60s.
Nice capsule you could integrate into that, okay.
Yes, so I'm just working on my script, and I'm very pleased to be able to add that.
It was so remarkable because it wasn't related to the stroke. It was just something the boys had decided to do on their own. And they were going to surprise me and have a lunch, sort of a situation where one or two of them invited me out, and then people were going to fly in and everything, you know. So they had to give that up because of my stroke. The most ironic thing about this is that these things happen independently, okay?
How appropriate that they're all going to be on KHOI in just a few minutes.
Yeah, well, I just think that that's a remarkable turn of events. And of course, everything about my stroke was a remarkable turn of events because I happened to be on the phone with somebody at the time that I had the stroke, and that totally became my rescue because I was alone. And so if I had not had that conversation and became disoriented, you know, then they were able to send help and pick me up in the ambulance. You know, that was remarkable too, because all these remarkable events that came together, the fact that I was rescued and the fact that I was...
And I'm looking forward to getting this ready and having that as the introduction to our guests tomorrow morning.
Well, I'm really thankful you're doing this. That's really wonderful. I hope it's coming together okay for you.
It's coming together pretty well. I mean, it's now out of my hands. Jeff Bournes is organizing.
Thank you, Paul. Paul couldn't be with us on Zoom, but he's listening from his room in Story City, and he clearly is delighted that you're here. And I believe that everybody's here now, that everybody who is going to be here. Thank you all for coming, and have a nice reunion.
Yeah.
Hi, Jeff. Can you start it off?
Sure. It's great. And I haven't seen Jeff Connor for a long time. He's looking good. I'm jealous. Everybody's looking good. Let me just briefly mention how this sort of got started, because I think it says a lot about Paul. I'd been in touch with Dominic, and I mentioned to him that I was writing a letter to Paul and thinking of putting it in the local paper just to thank him for everything he did for me. Because, you know, when you get to retirement age, you start thinking back about the people that were important. And Paul was really important to me. And, you know, I wasn't anything special, but I thought Paul did a lot for me, because unlike many of my colleagues that are here, I really wasn't participating in sports or extracurricular activities. So I mentioned this to Dom, who was, you know, in the band National Honor Society and doing all these things. And I said how Paul really had an impact on my life. Dominic said, well, he was very influential to me. And I think 2 days later, he sent me a write-up that I included in the ad. And I was so impressed that Dom felt that way that we decided to reach out and talk to the other guys. And we got 6 of the 8 core members and all used different words, but all had great experiences with Paul. And this is the one thing I want to mention about Paul. He had no favorites. He helped everybody. He kept things confidential. I just found out some things I didn't know that happened 50 years ago. But it's just great to be here with the rest of the guys, and like to pass to them. Maybe they have a few anecdotes about Paul they want to mention. Or
just to get us started, I'm curious about how you got your name.
Paul had called it the Voluntary Helpers Society.
Yeah.
Correct? That's what the club name was. But that also was Valley High School. We were all Valley High School members of Valley. So it happened to be the same acronym as Voluntary Helper Society. So that's as far as I know how the name came about.
Did you feel like you were helpers, that you were accomplishing something to make things better?
Yeah, I think all of us do. I don't, you know, again, Jeff mentioned 50 years ago, so I don't, I guess, remember things vividly, but the things you do remember, the main things was when we were helping people, you know. That's something as young adults you don't do. You don't do enough. And Paul made sure that we learned that that was a very important part of being an adult or a good person.
Yeah, I'd like to add, this is Dominic speaking. Hi, everybody, by the way, Randy,
hey.
Jeff, good to see you guys.
Good to see you.
I remember that first meeting when we had to decide on our name. We really wanted to incorporate VHS because, as Randy said, that was our high school. But the Volunteer Helpers of Society, that was a bit contentious at that meeting. And I think some people thought, well, it sort of sounds corny, so maybe let's not do that because we're eighth graders and we didn't really want to be corny. But I don't really remember how we broke the tie, because I remember it was pretty close. Some people said yes, and a lot of other people felt strongly no. And I just have to believe that Paul probably directed us in his quiet manner to saying, you know, let's just try this. This will be okay. And coincidentally, it ended up being one of our missions that, again, Paul helped to nurture throughout our high school, where we really did go out and help others in the community.
Thank you. Does the other Jeff want to say anything?
Absolutely. I'd love to. First of all, I'd like to thank Paul for sticking with us when he should have split early on, because we were a rowdy bunch, and we probably didn't do things to the perfect letter of the law once in a while, but we had a great time doing it. Paul was so influential to all of us. And it's such an inspiration that Jeff Borns would reach out to the people that he did and us get together and thank Paul properly. That was great. I appreciate it, Jeff.
Well, I've had some conversations with Paul about this, so I know he really appreciates you and appreciated you, because he'd often say something about your group. And as you could tell from my introduction, he's still helping people. I mean, you know, those midnight phone, it wasn't quite midnight, late day phone calls that I got. I mean, I called him. He never called me. Maybe he'd say, are you getting along all right? But even this year, when he's not able to be on the show with his picture, he sometimes calls in and he can have an interview, or he can, he won't stay unless he's contributing. Yeah, I mean, stay in the pictures. And he can't have his picture on because he has to phone in from his phone. And he's still doing it. He's still helping people.
Susan, if I can just mention, when I think back, Paul was something like 26 years old when the club started. I don't know about my colleagues, but when I was 26, I could not have even conceived of trying to bring together, 13, 14-year-old obnoxious kids. And, you know, he stuck it out and did so much. I mean, it was just amazing. And for me, like everybody, he taught us a lot of things. And one thing was photography. But it went beyond just learning how to shoot a camera. He turned his bathroom, very small bathroom, into a dark room for us to develop our pictures. He got me my first, I think, only paid gig for shooting pictures somewhere. I mean, he was just doing things that just I don't think anybody else could have done. And I really appreciate it.
You know, I'd like to just add to Jeff's comment. This is Dominic again. What was really interesting is Paul had a way of making it all fun. So despite the fact that we were learning a lot of things, and doing volunteer projects that were effective in the community. It was never a hardcore lesson that you would typically learn from your parents, but rather it was always couched in fun. And he always had fun with us. And as Jeff had alluded to, Jeff Connors had alluded to earlier, we did have a lot of fun, and sometimes the fun probably went past anybody's bar, except for those of us that were in high school. And and still Paul stuck with us, and he certainly didn't encourage some of the fun that we had, but he would laugh about the consequences with us and let us know that sometimes our behavior did have some negative consequences. So he was just an amazing role model for somebody that was 26 to 30. It's just, as Jeff Bournes had said earlier, it was really inconceivable, the maturity and what he gave us as a young adult.
Well, one of the things that nobody has mentioned, except Paul told me that you met in your homes, so that he got to know your parents. Is that right?
That's very true. He knew all of our parents very well.
And I think they all loved him.
Yeah,
they all had my parents, especially my mother, had a lot of respect for Paul, and she knew I went to Paul for a lot of answers to questions I had that all adolescents have, and she was very appreciative of Paul. Over the years, she's asked about him more than any of the guys in the club, so she must to like Paul better than all you guys. I don't know, but
understandable.
Yeah, definitely. But Paul, he, you know, some of these projects we do, the 2-hour cutting wood for the gentleman that had only a wood burning stove that took 10 hours to do, you know, I mean, in 2 hours we could have had that project done, but we made it last about 10, you know, and that was just part of the, you know, the learning process. And Paul had the patience to let us be kids, yet the knowledge to groom us into, you know, young adults.
Well, this has been a wonderful reunion, and I'm so happy that you're all here, and I'm happy for Zoom that, as it was, I think you had other things to do today, and some of them you had to put off. I guess Dom has to leave. And
Susan, could I interject just one last thing that I remember about Paul that was very, very helpful to me? So our high school senior class had four commencement speakers, and I was one of those. And I think I was just overwhelmed by the fact I'd be speaking to 450 of my classmates. And so I had some ideas on what I was going to say during this 8 to 10 minute speech, but I just couldn't come up with a theme or a speech of any sort. I just couldn't put it together. So I happened to mention it to Paul, and Paul said, well, why don't you come over and we can talk about it? So we did. And I really didn't know where this was going to go. I still felt I would be on my own to come up with something. But Paul and I started talking about the politics of the time, and this happened to be 1974 in the spring, and so we were our country was enmeshed in Watergate. And so Paul said, well, you know, if you have any feelings about this, why don't we talk about that and see if you can't turn that into a graduation speech? And we did, and without Paul imparting his politics at the time, we came upon the fact that our leadership needed to be trusted, and we needed good leaders in our country, and they needed to set an example for all of us who are citizens of the country. And so he ended up helping me very much to create a speech that I reflect back on to this day. Thanks, Paul.
That's amazing. You sounds like we need your commencement speech right away.
I think it's timely, yes.
Well, thank you all. I can tell you had some wonderful experiences with Paul. And by the way, I have to tell you that he's doing this still. I mean, He is a senior volunteer, and his project is something called Speak Up. And it's a 6-week course that he goes once a week to the various high schools. And he has clubs he makes the speech class a club, and they give speeches and, you know, learn how to formulate the speeches and how to be a good audience. And I once went with him to, we were doing another project, interviewing a teacher in Colo. And when we went into the school, the students, the word went around that Paul Wearson was there, and about 6 or 8 students crowded around him, and it was like being there with a movie star.
Very cool.
Well, thanks a lot, and I wish that you could all go out to lunch together now, but you all have busy days in different places, so.
Well, we're going to make it happen, Paul. We'll get together.
Yeah, we definitely will. Thank you, Susan. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Jeff, we'll see you somewhere.
I hope so. Have fun day today, guys.
Thanks.
Well, thanks for all coming in.
Yep.
It's just no good anymore since you went away. Number one is the loneliest. Number one is the loneliest. Number one is the loneliest number that you ever knew. Number one is the loneliest. Number one is the loneliest. Number one is the loneliest number that you ever knew.
The music break was won by Three Dog Night at the suggestion of Jeff Bourne, who, in case you just tuned in, was one of the members of the YMCA-sponsored group that Paul Wearson advised from 1969 to 1974. They zoomed into the KHOI studios this morning for a virtual reunion. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm Susan Franzen, your host for today. The rest of the morning is a celebration of the stories of remarkable people from Central Iowa, among those who were the members of the volunteer fire departments. And when I was first exploring South Story Towns, I attended some events put on by the Kelly Fire Department. So when I read the Ogden Reporter about the fire in Pilot Mound, in which 9 volunteer fire departments joined to fight a fire in the timber, I tried to find someone who could describe how they worked together and what other services they provided. I was fortunate to catch Dan Ostrom, the fire chief of Stratford. Here's what he told me.
I'm Dan Ostrom, fire chief of the Stratford Fire Department.
Now, is this a volunteer fire department?
Yes, it's all volunteer.
And I think people who don't live in the country don't know very much about volunteer fire departments. And I worked with the one down in Kelly and went to some of their events and discovered what they did. I thought, this is just amazing. And so you're definitely very, very special people. And I wish that you could tell us what the volunteer fire departments do and how they do it.
Okay. Our situation is kind of about the same as most other volunteer fire departments. Ours is a little different because we run an ambulance service out of ours also. So we're 100% volunteer, which means there's no one manning the station 24 hours a day. The fire station is empty with from people. But when there's an emergency happen, we all carry pagers and radios and cell phones. When we get a page, it comes from the dispatch center to our radios and pagers, and that dispatches us, and we either respond from where we're working or from home, or we respond to the station and get the equipment and head out from there.
Did you say ambulance?
Yes, we run an ambulance service too.
Why don't you describe the equipment that you have? Because if you go on the websites, your various Facebook pages, you see beautiful pictures of fire trucks and other things. And I believe in small town parades, I've seen a lot of equipment. In fact, I think sometimes it's even from other neighboring towns.
Yes, yes, that's true. Since we're all little towns and we are relatively close by, a lot of the issue is there's not a lot of people around during the daytime because of work schedules, and they work out of town, and school events and church events. And so people are around here and there. So the neighboring towns rely on each other quite heavily, which it's called mutual aid. So if there's another little town that's having staffing issues, or they've got something going on, an event going on, they can call us over and we can come help them out. So that along those same lines, when there's like a city celebration or a community event going on, since we work closely with those neighboring communities, we'll always send a truck over or something to be in their parade or help them out with an event. Or, you know, equipment's not cheap, so it's a struggle all the time to try to keep equipment updated.
Why don't you explain what the process is? You don't tap into city water when you go out to fire in the country, right?
Correct, yes. Yeah. There is rural water systems out in the country, but they cannot supply enough water for fighting a fire. For small town Iowa or small town anywhere, we usually have to bring our own water with us. So we rely heavily on tanker trucks. So we have one truck or more, and it depends on your situation, that's dedicated to strictly hauling water. So in our situation, we've got five fire trucks. We've got two pumper trucks, and we've got a tanker truck. And, of course, we've got our rescue truck and a few brush trucks and a few other things. But in the situation we're talking about, our engine or a pumper truck will go out, get set up. It holds 1,000 gallons of water. Our pump, when it's running full blast, will pump 1,250 gallons a minute. That doesn't take long to get rid of 1,000 gallons of water. So we follow that truck with what we call a tanker truck, which holds 2,400 gallons of water. So that put a tank down on the ground, which basically is a glorified swimming pool, a little fold-up swimming pool that holds up to 3,000 gallons of water. We can dump that tanker truck while set that up to be pumping onto the pumper truck, and that truck can take back off, head back into town, and get another load of water. So we've got a constant supply. And it, like in our situation, we are kind of out in the middle of nowhere. So it takes a while to make a run to town and get water back. So we're always calling the neighboring towns to help bring water and haul water and keep things supplied.
The reason I'm calling you is because of this fire that was at Pilot Mound.
Yes.
And it was actually out in the timber.
Yes, it was a residence that was in timber.
So you were not successful in saving the house, but what did happen that night?
Well, we were like I mentioned before, we were a mutual aid assistance department that night. The actual department that covers that area is Pilot Mound and Boxholm. Well, they were short on people, and the water supply out there is terrible because there's nothing out there in the middle of nowhere. So they were calling neighboring departments to help bring in water and bring in manpower to help fight this fire. Well, come to find out that this house residence was tucked way back into the timber. Still don't know what started it. I probably won't know because it wasn't our fire. We were just a mutual aid to that. But we were called for manpower and water assistance. So getting back to access that fire was the biggest issue. It was a very small driveway, very long driveway. So we could only get one truck back in there to be able to pump off of, and we had to shuttle guys back and forth on UTVs and pickups and then pump water from the road from one truck to another truck to work on putting the fire out.
And as I understand, there was another small fire in the neighboring timber. Is that right?
It was caused by that same fire because of it was windy that night also, so the embers blowing off of the main house were igniting small fires in the timber. We're lucky enough to have a Polaris Ranger in our department that's got a small water tank and pump on it. So we sent a couple guys down there along with a couple of neighboring departments who also had one, and they worked their way through the timber putting those small fires out.
So it could have been much, much worse.
Yes, it could have been much, much worse. We could have been there for several days if things didn't get stopped the way they did.
How many of these fires do you have in an average year?
Our department is a little different because we have a pretty good group of people that can respond during the day, during all different times of the day. So we help out neighboring towns quite often. For us, we average 40 to 45 fires a year, somewhere in there that we go out and help either is in our district or in the neighboring, helping out the neighboring towns.
Well, I heard you say something earlier about an ambulance. Do you have any other health needs that you handle?
Oh yes, we run two BLS ambulance service. So BLS is basic life support. If it was like a hospital-based ambulance, that's an ALS service, which is advanced life support. So they've got paramedics on board. We just have strictly EMTs. So we're a basic service. So we can get there and do many of the medical procedures, but we can't administer drugs or do a few things that like an advanced service can. But we do run two ambulances out of our station.
The emergency services that you provide, you have a lot of trained people in the various towns, right?
Yes, yes. Like I said, our department is a little different than a lot of them because we run an ambulance service, a BLS ambulance service. We also run fire trucks to cover our area. We have rope rescue equipment for high angle rescue. We have grain bin equipment for grain bin rescue, vehicle extrication. We have gas monitors. We have a boat for water rescues. We do a lot of technical rescue for out in the wilderness for searches. And, you know, somebody's injured in the timber because we cover a lot of timber area and river ground. We have 29 people on our department, and they are some of the best highly qualified people that are in the area.
How are these people trained?
They're all volunteers, and they put in a tremendous amount of time getting their EMT training, getting their firefighter training. There's a level called Firefighter 1, and that's what we require on our department. It's a certain level of training that you have to have. We work with a training company and called PRI, and which is Professional Rescue Innovations, and we also work with the State Fire Service to provide training to our guys and gals. I guess I shouldn't leave them out. And we also have to have 24 hours continuing ed every year for our EMS license. And each person has to have 24 hours continuing ed on top of that for their Firefighter 1 certification.
So you really have not only the expense of getting the equipment, but also of providing the training for your volunteers.
Oh, yes, yes. The training is, luckily the fire service, Iowa State Fire Service, provides training for free as long as you've got a certain amount of people. You have to have 12 people per class at least.
I think you also have, this creates a lot of support within your towns, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. We have a very good our city and community supports our fire service and rescue service very well, very well.
And so it must really be a great source of pride when you have put out a fire.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a pretty good source of pride. It's very humbling to be relied upon the way people rely on you. You know, there's It's very hard to explain. There's a brotherhood and sisterhood in the fire department that it's a big, big family from everybody that works together. And when a community relies on a group of individuals as much as they do, it's very humbling to be, to say the least, I guess is the best way to put it.
Well, I think that you certainly are among the unsung heroes, I think, except you're pretty well known within your towns, right?
Yes, we are. Yes. We do a lot of community education. You know, we go to the school every year for Fire Prevention Week. And so all those, and we just have an elementary school in our town. So all the little kids, they know us as the firemen and the EMTs and the people that run the fire trucks. And when we do events and fundraisers, a lot of the fundraisers will sell off a fire truck ride to school. You know, the highest bidder will get their kid a fire truck ride to school. So that's a big joy for kids. And, you know, the list goes on and on.
Well, this is terrific. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your giving me all this wonderful news.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been celebrating the stories of people in Central Iowa. To wrap up our celebration of outstanding people, we have Sarah Thompson, who was just named one of the Des Moines Register's 2022 People to Watch because of her passion for revitalizing small towns through stories. Thanks for joining us today, Sarah.
Good morning.
It's wonderful to have you with us, and you've been on since the beginning to listen to the stories that we have, and actually I should thank you for yesterday afternoon. I found I didn't have a story that I thought I was going to have, and I said, can you help me? And you told me to call Dave Ostrom, the fire chief in Stratford, told us what they did, and I think that's just incredible. What people
do. Yeah, Dan is pretty awesome. I have kind of a connection to all of the stories on today. When I was in Story City working for the Greater Chamber Connection there, I helped with the storytelling festival, and Paul was on the board for that, and he could tell some great stories. So I know Paul and Dan in Stratford. I worked for a time in Stratford doing some economic development, and so yeah, it's been a good morning listening to your radio show.
Well, thank you for joining us. And I feel like I've been following Jewel for a long time because I knew it way back when we were sailing at Little Wall Lake. And Jewel was, you know, it was just up there. And it's sort of like, well, is there anything more that you wouldn't want to go to than Jewel? And ever since I've been on KHOI, there have been great stories coming out of Jewel. And they have a wonderful development.
Their development group is called JADE, Jewel Area Development Enterprise. And then in 2019, they became their own Main Street community. They were part of a countywide Main Street prior to that. And so they're also Jewel, a Main Street community, and JADE is the organization that kind of facilitates that Main Street program.
But most recently, JADE was featured in local papers and then even in the Des Moines Register for a new restaurant, a trendy restaurant, and mentioned this. It was a shopping destination. And this was so far from the Jewel that I had first known. I'd gone back there for their historical society and other things that they seem to be involved with. But the idea that it was a shopping destination really blew me away.
And did you check out the stores? Have you been down there since?
I haven't been down there recently because I'm isolated.
Okay. Yeah. It's been kind of quite the years, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, they have really turned into a cute little destination with vintage shops, and they all kind of work together to promote themselves and to promote each other. It's fantastic over there.
Use as a model or other towns in your head? How do you do this?
So working with Jewel has definitely influenced how I work with other communities, but also my time in Story City. And for a while, I was the Main Street director in Lansing, Iowa. And so I kind of take all of those experiences and use them when I help other communities or other businesses. Sometimes I work with just individual businesses looking to find the right spot or figure out what they want to do. Just working with all the communities I've worked with has really been an influence.
So how do you use storytelling?
Sure. So it's kind of a long story, but during COVID, I was sitting at home. I my consulting business wasn't really doing anything because nobody could go anywhere or nobody had any resources or money to hire a consultant either. So I decided I'd finally write that novel that I always said I would write. And in procrastinating that novel, I came up with this idea to maybe write some short stories about some of the stores that I really liked in Jewel. And I wrote the first one about Fairy and Frog, which is one of the smaller stores in the little sheds that are part of the Vendor's Village in Jewel. And I talked to Amanda and asked her if she liked it, and she liked it. And then I wrote another story and they liked it. So I decided, what if I put these stories together and then they could take the book and sell it as a fundraiser? And so then I thought, well, I could go anywhere and write stories for their businesses and they could then sell it as a fundraiser. So I'm just getting this off the ground. I'm hoping it's going to work out. I've already started another book on Eagle Grove. I have a wonderful illustrator who is the chamber director over there, and her name is Sarah Middleton, and she is wonderful, and she is passionate about helping chambers and Main Streets, too. So it worked out well.
Well, that's amazing, and it's also amazing to me that...
You know, I think every small town could revitalize themselves, and communities are a lot like people. There's, you know, personalities involved, and so... Jewel, they've really cultivated this vintage thing, but there are other communities that are organizing around art, and they have a lot of art shows and art displays and art events. And there's other ways that communities can use their assets that they already have and draw people in. I think it's so important now, especially to shop locally, you know, try to get everything you need in your area first, because what we saw during COVID was if you don't have anything in your community, you're going to really be isolated. And so it's just nice to see these communities that want to try to bring back some of the amenities and the extras.
Oh, that's an interesting concept. Yes, that communities are like people and they have personalities.
I find it to be true.
Do you connect the stories of communities the way you connect to people you meet?
Very much so, yes. So when I go into a community, especially if I'm going to work with them, I like to go in first and just kind of look around and see what they have without anybody knowing, you know, who I am or what I'm doing or what's going on, just so I can get a feel for what it's like to, you know, just your average Joe. And then I can be honest and say, listen, I got here. I didn't get a friendly feel, or I got here and it was super friendly. Everybody was bending over backwards. And it helps to lay the framework for if we're going to work on, you know, what needs to happen. To be honest and know what visitors feel when they come to your community, right? Because when you live somewhere, you kind of, that's just where you live and that's just how it is. And you don't often think, well, we could be different or we could change this or something could come along and be a different way. And so, and plus I just like to listen to the stories. I can take a story from one community and apply it somewhere else and they're, allegories are always helpful, right, when you're working with communities.
Well, actually, I can really identify with this because Wednesday, Local Talk, it's very interesting to me what you're doing, because it's certainly true that each town does have some personality. In fact, that's how I got started with Paul. When we started the radio station, I'd worked on getting us on the air. And that was a many-year process. And when we got on the air, Ursula Rudenberg, who was our station manager at the time, said, well, why don't you go to all the towns in Story County and go to the mayors and get a 10-minute interview with them? Well, I didn't know how I was going to interview a mayor. I did send out to the mayors, and 6 of the 12 responded, and the others have dropped off my radar because they didn't call back.
Right.
And so the only way we could have interviews in those days was to go with our Tascam recorders to the place and set it up and talk to the person we were talking to. And so Paul and I went together as a team, and he did the interview, and I pushed the buttons on the recorder. And everywhere that we went, Paul knew something about the town, and he would ask a question or a sign that he was familiar with the town. For example, we went to Kelly, and Kelly has a very famous phone booth. At that time, someone had donated an English phone booth, and the idea was maybe they would have phone booths with pay phones at opposite ends of the main street. Well, I think that the English phone booth has not made it to the street, but the other phone booth is on there, and people come from all over the country to make a call from that phone booth. Paul knew about that. And when we went to Slater, he mentioned the 4th of July celebration they always had because his cousin had played in the band. And it was like that everywhere we went. Paul knew somebody. Even if he didn't, I learned something interesting about the town. Each town had something it was proud of and somebody it was proud of. And I realized that I lived here in Central Iowa at that time for almost 50 years, and I had no idea what was just 10 or 15 miles away. And that's one of the things I wanted to do on Local Talk, was to make these towns come alive for other people. It's just a great experience to get to know these towns and watch them grow. And so thank you for what you're doing.
Because, you know, when you grow up in your community, you kind of think everything is the same. And so when you get out and you see that other small towns aren't anything like your small town, it's a lot of fun. And I think we can all learn from each other and get better and fill all our buildings downtown and have all our homes. I think Central Iowa, Iowa in general, is a great state to live in.
Thank you. I actually had selected a song that I'd been thinking about when I was planning the interview with you, but I listened to it again last night. It's Simon and Garfunkel's My Little Town, which you may know. It's a pretty song, but it's pretty depressing. Are you familiar with the song?
I am not, but I love Simon and Garfunkel, so I'm sure I'll like the song.
Well, okay, but it's a little bit of a downer. It's where what a lot of people feel about their little town, so until they meet you and you hear the stories. So say goodbye to you and hello to Simon and Garfunkel. And thank you so much for being with us today, Sarah.
Thank you.
My little town. I grew up believing God keeps his eye on us all. And he used to lean upon me as I pledged allegiance to the wall.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen. Other voices you heard were members of the YMCA High Y Club, Jeff Burns, Dom Ferentes, Jeff Connor, and Randy Cox. In 1969, to 1974, honoring their advisor at the time, Paul Wearson. In the latter half of the program, we heard from Dan Ostrom, Fire Chief of Stratford, and Sarah Thompson, Director of Rural Revival. Remember, you can also hear this program online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Due to new programs added into the KHOI schedule, Moccasin Tracks will replace the rebroadcast of Local Talk at 7 p.m. Local Talk was engineered by our interim station manager, Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was My Little Town by Simon and Garfunkel and One by Three Dog Night. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! At the top of the hour. Morning Masterpieces will follow at 9 a.m. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. If you want to become a member, you can go to our website, khoifm.org, and hit the yellow Donate Become a Member button. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.